the one place where news, opinions, and entertainment are the way you like it. This is Rant EM Radio.
Hello, welcome to Rant & Wrestling. This is your boy, Doomsday 519. This is episode 202? Shit. Yeah, 202 of Rant & Wrestling. And, yeah, we're gonna get into it. Some interesting stuff happened in the past week and shit. And, so, of course, I'm going to introduce my co-host for the evening. Hailing from the West Side Goth.
Yay, yay.
Oh, yay, yay, yay. Okay, so, yeah, so New Japan shows happened, Fastlane stuff, so I'm gonna take it to West Side to break that shit down for you.
Alright, start with Fastlane, the pay-per-view that I kept forgetting happened, and then I forgot that happened until you mentioned we had to talk about it.
Yep,
so, alright, so, yep, Fastlane was a SmackDown brand show, the last of the singular branded pay-per-views. Theme song was something called Win Back by Sir. I don't even remember hearing it. Maybe I wasn't paying attention. Probably wasn't.
Oh, wow.
Sponsor tap out. It says here the attendance was over 15,000. Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio. So, pre-show, we had Breezango and Ty Dillinger defeated Mojo Rawley, Chad Gable, and Shelton Benjamin. Did you watch this match?
No, I did not.
Okay, I did, and the fans were chanting, "You can't wrestle to Mojo Rawley."
Jesus.
And he just yelled back, "I don't care. I'm not here to wrestle." Which I thought was actually fascinating. But I think Ty Dillinger got the victory over Mojo Rawley with his move. To be fair, I had the show on, but I was doing other stuff, so I was going back and forth. What I saw of it, it was pretty standard.
I think I was playing video games. I forgot what I was doing.
I'm sure whatever you were doing was more important than the match.
Oh, most definitely.
Next up, the opening show match was Shinsuke Nakamura defeated Rusev with Aiden English in just under 15 minutes. From what I watched, I would say this was probably my favorite match of the show. And it was okay, but then got very heated at the end of the match.
Yeah.
So, any thoughts?
Yeah, I actually really enjoyed this one. Rusev, again, he doesn't get enough credit for shit.
I know. He's been on a roll. Even in losing, he's still really fun.
Yeah, shit. Even on SmackDown, after the fact, he has a match against AJ Styles, which was actually pretty dope before it was rudely interrupted by Aiden English. Yeah. But he's had some solid work, and hopefully he can really get his shine eventually, you know?
And Aiden English has been a very good hype man. I liked his little pseudo-rap thing before introducing Rusev Day. So, overall, best match so far. Then we go to probably the most boring match on the show. Randy Orton defeated Bobby Roode in 19 minutes and 15 seconds for the WWE United States Championship. After the match, you had some Jinder Mahal shenanigans. Overall, the match, which, you know, they keep talking about how, you know, Randy Orton is what, if you could build a wrestler from the ground up, no, thank you, I'm tired of
stop
Randy
that shit.
I know, if I was building a wrestler from the ground up, I'd have built a Hart, or a Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, exactly.
Or rebuild Shibata 2.0, just take the headbutt away from his moveset. I mean, this was a pretty standard, old-school, Southern-style wrestling match, but it didn't have the heat of the good Southern, old-school-style wrestling matches. I mean, I guess it did have heat, but, you know, I mean, Randy Orton gets a pretty decent response.
See,
but I care fucking less.
For a Randy Orton match, this was actually solid. I'll give him that.
Oh, I don't doubt it. It's just, you know, I wasn't paying enough attention to what I saw. Yeah. I could care less.
Yeah, for a Randy Orton match, this one was actually one of his better matches in years, to be honest. And that's not saying that much, but still.
No. Yeah. I think the last singles match that I really, really liked from Randy Orton was his brief feud with Daniel Bryan.
Oh, yeah.
He had some very good matches there. He also had a very underrated match with Fandango years back. It was on Raw. It was really good. Next up was an okay women's tag team match. Natalya and Carmella defeated Becky Lynch and Naomi in just under 9 minutes. It was okay. Any thoughts on that one?
I barely paid attention to that shit. I don't even know who fucking won that one. I don't know.
I remember watching it and I thought it was fun at the time, but I forgot Natalya and Carmella won. Yeah. I really did. But at the time I thought it was okay. The Usos and the New Day went to a no contest when the Bludgeon Brothers came out and just bludgeoned everybody.
That was an interesting one.
Yeah, it was building up pretty nicely. I have mixed feelings about the Bludgeon Brothers winning, because I'm sure that this would have been the best match on the show if it had just gone with these two.
Yeah.
But I guess it...
They got a storyline to push.
Yeah, and they hadn't done with anything with the Bludgeon Brothers for, what, the 8 months they've been on television? I don't know. I'm sure the triple threat tag match at the pay-per-view will be fine, but, yeah, this was kind of whatever. Next up, Charlotte Flair defeated Ruby Riott to retain the SmackDown Women's Championship in just under 14 minutes. And this was a pretty good match, but I never once thought Ruby Riott was going to win, and no. I think that kind of hurt my enjoyment.
Yeah.
But afterwards, we had the Empress of Tomorrow, Asuka, come out and challenge Charlotte Flair, because Charlotte Flair versus Asuka is a much better match in theory than her versus Alexa Bliss.
Yes, because like that's what I was hoping for the fact that now it opens up shit for Nia versus Alexa.
Yes,
at WrestleMania, and that's one that I think it won't be like a stellar match, but it's storyline wise, I'm into it.
Yeah, storyline wise, that match works. Wrestling-wise, this one's worked. Charlotte Flair has come a long way. I had my doubts about her for a long while. I thought she was okay, but, you know, not as good as Sasha Banks and Bayley or Becky Lynch, but she has leaped above them in presentation. I still think that she needs to drop that fucking moonsault because it looks horrible the way she lands.
Really?
Because she lands really weird. Like, she does. Because sometimes she'll just land on her feet and then fall forward.
I mean, she got the corkscrew shit, so...
The corkscrew looks nicer. I would prefer her to do the corkscrew, but I understand that it's harder on the knees to recover from.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if she was doing it on a standing opponent, I wouldn't have a problem with it, which is why the second, you know, when she kind of did it off the rail, it looked fine. But most of the time when she does it on a laying opponent, she doesn't land right.
Yeah.
I know it's a little criticism, but she goes for it, like, every match now, so it's like, come on. If she does it to the outside with them standing, I have no issue.
Oh, okay.
But, that's my... my other problem is I wish she would work a little bit more on a wrestler's leg.
Oh, right.
Before she puts on the figure eight.
Yeah, because she kind of just slaps it on, like... Yeah.
Yeah.
She doesn't work that shit ever.
Yeah, it's different, like, in Lucha Libre, they'll do that, but Lucha Libre has the silent psychology that any submission move or any like power move could just end a match flat. So you kind of understand that. Mm-hmm. That's why they do a lot of flips and strikes and arm drags, and then suddenly, bam, they'll end the match with the big move like that. It works for Lucha Libre, but for American wrestling, you're like, at least kick the leg a few times. You don't have to do a lot of holds, but, you know, stomping on the leg, maybe doing a knee smash, or even just like a regular leg grapevine. Just do a little something extra. But overall, pretty good match, great ending. And then we get to the main event. AJ Styles predictably successfully defended his title in the six-pack challenge against Kevin Owens, John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, Baron Corbin, and Sami Zayn in under 22 minutes. And I thought this match was kind of disappointing.
Really? Because I really enjoyed it.
Dolph Ziggler. I thought parts were good, but as I was watching it, like, Baron Corbin and Dolph Ziggler, for the most part, almost come off as an afterthought. To me, the match would have just been better if it was AJ Styles, Owens, Cena, and Zayn.
I didn't see it that way, because, like, I could still go back in my head and still remember the shit that they, both of those guys did. So, like, I felt like everybody got their shit in the match.
Well, like I said, I was only half paying attention. Like, I honestly don't remember a thing Baron Corbin did in the match. I'm pretty sure I saw Dolph Ziggler hit the zigzag a few times, though.
Well, yeah, Baron Corbin was wreaking havoc with
the Ziggler stuff with John Cena, I was fine with.
Yeah. But, yeah, Baron Corbin was wreaking havoc with, like, the steel steps and all that other crazy shit. Yep. And, of course, he had his little thing with Dolph. Like, he was getting, they were beating each other up, and then that's how they both ended up out of the match for a while, because they both took each other out for the most part, but, yeah, it was still interesting.
Sorry, I just got a call from my co-worker, some time change. I'm sorry, I had to step off a second.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's been a little weird with the scheduling at my job.
But, yeah,
like I said, I only paid, like, partial attention to the match. And when I think about it now, I can kind of remember some good Dolph Ziggler stuff with John Cena. Yeah. Like the reversal into the Famouser.
Oh, yeah. And then I remember the moment where all of them just said fucking and just started beating the shit out of John Cena.
That was a good part. But I think another thing that hurt me is I'm just so over the Shane McMahon thing, and it sounds like it's done at Raw now. I mean, SmackDown now.
Well, they led to it, like, they did it a great way. Like, once SmackDown hit, like, it led into something great in my eyes.
And I'm glad about that, but when Shane McMahon came out and said to the side, I'm like, yeah. I guess because I'm just over that storyline, especially with the last title match with the AJ versus Sammy and Owens.
Yeah.
And what was it? They had Shane and Daniel Bryan as the referees in that match. Was that the last one?
That was like two something-somethings ago. I forgot.
But it was probably one of my least favorite matches of the year.
A while ago, though.
Or, alright. Yeah, I guess I'm just sort of over it. I mean, I still think that Fastlane was overall a C show.
Yeah, I give it like a 7.
I'd go with under that, I'd go with a 6. I think there was potential here for a better show, and it just didn't click. But there was stuff on here that was pretty decent. Of course, now I question, where does Riot Squad go from here?
All right.
They need a women's tag title thing. And I'll talk about that when we get to the stupid Fabulous Moolah stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Since that kind of, I found out that one, that kind of ties in with the women's tag division.
Yeah.
All right, so that was Fastlane. Next up will be WrestleMania, thankfully. And I am still trying to keep a list of all the other shows happening that weekend. I got to figure out how to use WWN Live again because I haven't used it in like over 3 years. So maybe even longer. I don't know because I know they're going to be airing a bunch of really cool indie shows, so I got to figure out how that works out. Have you used WWN Live lately?
It's been a while because most of the time when I'm doing anything WWN Live related, it's me actually going to a live show.
Yeah. And you're not going to be able to do it this time, though.
Yeah, I won't.
Because I think they're airing the all the GCW stuff. And so, you know,
well, it's a good thing this month I'm getting paid three times instead of two, so that's something. Because, since it's one of those weird months where, like, there's, like, at least three different Fridays, like, the bi-weekly Fridays, so I got paid on the second. What was it? Second. Then I'm getting paid on the ninth. I got paid on the ninth. No, the second, and then the was it the 15th? It's gonna be the 15th, and then the 30th. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so it's good stuff. So I'll have plenty of money to actually pay for like all the stuff that's gonna go down during WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah, I want to watch the two GCW shows. I'm curious about Beyond. I just got to figure out how to, because I went on WWE Live and I'm like, because I guess, I mean, their IPTV section doesn't like, I guess they don't let you like pre-order anything, so it's just blank when you go there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was looking at it like, huh. I mean, I found the on-demand part, but I was like, how do I watch it live? But before we get there, we have New Japan shows to talk about. Did you watch any of the ones that happened?
You know what? I haven't watched a single fucking one.
All right. Well,
I feel like I'm like letting everyone down by not watching a whole bunch of this shit, even though I'm paying for it. You know?
Yeah. Well, there have been some good matches, but I'm gonna go through and highlight the important ones. Let's look at night one. Night one, by the way, if you listen to it, it's one of the few only ones that had English commentary. The show that happens tonight, which I talked about last week, will be the second show with English commentary. But this one had English commentary. After, which was just Kevin Kelly, and then later on, Chucky T came in for the rest of the show. So, there. If you like Chucky T's commentary, he was on there. All right, I didn't watch this first match. I did not watch the second match on here. What do we got here? Did not watch the third match. Fourth match, I probably skipped that shit too. I did watch Yoshihashi and Kazuchika Okada defeated Kota Ibushi and Chase Owens. Kota and Chase Owens have been tagging this whole series of shows, and they're getting better at better as a tag team, actually. They actually have a tag team moves now. So, Ibushi is hanging out with Chase. So, yeah, it was a pretty good match. And then we go into and Kenny Omega also tweeted out, because it was Chase's birthday that day, I got to give it up to the birthday boy, Chase Owens, for keeping the peace while I'm gone. So also, apparently Chase Owens has his own music too, so I think when he does any sort of singles matches, he'll get that music going on now. So good on him.
Yeah.
And then we had, after that, we actually had the New Japan Cup matches. The first night one opened up with Juice Robinson defeating Yujiro Takahashi, and this was a really good match. I know a lot of people shit on Yujiro. He's not necessarily one of my favorites. I think he's amusing. But this was a very good match. Yujiro legit was working hard. He was trying to kill Juice with those fisherman busters. He did one on the outside, one on the chair. Well, he did one on the chairs on the outside. He did a super fisherman's buster, and I think he did a regular one too. I mean, he still lost, but he pulled out all his tricks. This was a very good match. Crowd was into it. And then during the post-match interviews, they interviewed him, and he was disappointed with his own performance, saying this was going to be his point to get back on track, because he's saying that he wants to get back into the G1. Right. So Yujiro's trying really hard, and this match was really, really good. Some people actually said that it was their favorite match of the tournament so far, and their favorite match of night one, depending on who you talk to. But yeah. Night one's main event was Elgin defeating Tomohiro Ishii. This was a mean-ass match. Elgin almost killed Ishii with the super crucifix bomb. I think you saw that clip online, right?
Oh, yeah, I saw that shit. That shit was nasty, dude. I was like, what the fuck?
It was very, very good. I liked it. I'm starting to think it may not have been as good as the Yujiro Juice match. They're both about equal in my book, but yeah. Night one opened up with two really good tournament matches, and the feeling is that they know that they have more people internationally watching this year, so the tournament matches are a lot hotter than they would normally be, and that's why all the shows this year are multi-camera and with commentary. Because, a few years there were no commentary, single camera, and they would just upload the one or two matches.
Yeah.
This year they uploaded all the shows, so, they're putting more effort into this one. It was a the matches were the first round matches were good for the night one. Night two, let's bring it up. I'm using Voices of Wrestling's reviews things just so I remember the layout of the shows. And for some reason, this one does not want to... Oh, there it is. Alright, so we open with a match I skipped. Don't care. Skip that match as well. Skip that match. A lot of the Young Lions have been working a lot of the undercard matches, so if you care about their development, you can check it out, see how they're doing. Alright. I skipped that match too, I think. Where are we? Okay, here was an interesting one. Chaos, team of Okada, Goto, Yoshihashi, and Chucky T defeated Kota Ibushi and the Bullet Club. Ibushi team with Chase Owens again, but they also had Yujiro Takahashi and Tonga Loa. And Kota Ibushi actually shook hands with everybody there. Huh. So, yeah. Kota's friends with the Tongan representation of the Bullet Club.
Huh.
Chase kept trying to get him to do the two sweet though, but Kota wouldn't go that far.
Wow.
But yeah, this was a pretty good 8-man tag match. I enjoyed it. Then we got the New Japan Cup matches. The next set of first round matches: Bad Luck Fale defeated Lance Archer. I thought this match was whatever. Some people liked it better than I did. But I'm not too big on Lance Archer. Fale's okay, but, you know, whatever. The main event was Hiroshi Tanahashi defeated Taichi. It's a pretty good match. Taichi hit some nice... he hit a gonzo bomb, which was not as ugly as a Kawada gonzo bomb, but it was still a thing to see.
Yeah.
He also hit some really mean, dangerous backdrops. But in the end, of course, Tanahashi won. But... this is Taichi's second singles match as a champ, as a heavyweight, and so far he's doing pretty well. I think I might actually like him better as a heavyweight wrestling a more straightforward match than as a junior who stalls and cheats all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still cheating, but not as much. So those two matches were pretty good. Still, night one was the best so far. But night three had two excellent tournament matches. I'll get to those as soon as I look through what else was on here. Yeah, don't care. Don't care about that one. Did I watch this one? I did not watch that match either. No. Where are we? Alright, Chucky T and Kazuchika Okada defeated Bushi and Sanada, which was leading up to the Chucky T Sanada match. That was pretty good. Then we also got, here we go. Tournament matches. Kota Ibushi defeated Yoshihashi, and this match was excellent. I know a lot of us talk trash about Yoshihashi, but this was a really good match. I mean, and I went into this like, yeah, I know Kota Ibushi's winning. I don't know if I care. To, God damn. Yoshihashi really fucking tried to win that shit. So, definitely go out of your way to see this one if you can. But, very hot match. And Kota Ibushi did a moonsault off of one of the, you know, outside off of one of the little things. But, you know, whenever Ibushi can moonsault from the crowd, he's going to moonsault from the crowd. He even did it in the when he was teaming with all the Bullet Club guys. But, yep, Yoshihashi, Kota Ibushi, definitely a very fucking good match. And that was followed up by another good fucking match as Zack Sabre Jr. made Tetsuya Naito tap out to one of his submission finishers called Orienting the Napalm Death, or Orienting Around Napalm Death, or something like that. Then Japanese announcers had trouble with naming that. But the move is a combination stretch muffler while a leg lock using his legs. So he has him pretty much tied up with nowhere to go. This was a very fucking good match. Zach had an answer for all of Naito's stuff. And Naito was talking all this shit about how there was only like six people in the tournament worth the damn, which were him, Sanada, Tanahashi, Ishii, and... well, not even Ishii, it might have been Ishii, and Ibushi specifically. So, you know, he didn't care about Zack Sabre Jr. Zack Sabre beat him. So, another great fucking match. Taka Michinoku has been working as the Zack Zack Sabre Jr. hype man who coming out talking how Zack's going to make everyone tap out. So, very good match. And then let's get to the last of the first round matches. Let's bring this card up. Here we go. Alright, we had another Chase Owens and Kota Ibushi lost to Tomohiro Ishii, Kazuchika Okada. That match was pretty good. I also watched Naito and Ibushi defeat Taka Michinoku and Zack Sabre Jr. Alright, and then we have the tournament matches. We had Toriano defeated Davey Boy Smith Jr. in a match that went longer than 5 minutes. No match where Toriano wins should ever be longer than 5 minutes. Unless it's a tag team match, in which case I'll give it the benefit of the doubt. But come on, right? A Yano singles match? Should not be going more than 5 minutes. Alright, and then, in 2018, Chuck Taylor main evented a New Japan show.
Yeah.
But he lost to Sonata.
Yeah.
This was a pretty good match, and the crowd started really to get into it. Yeah, they had actually pretty good chemistry. There was a bit, though, Sonata was trying to, like, was throwing Chucky T on the outside or whatever, but once Chucky T got back in control, he screamed, like, I'm tired of, it's like, no more fucking around, he wants to fuck around, I'm a deathmatch legend. Or some shit like that. And then he pulled a table out, and they started teasing for the table, but Chuck Taylor did body slam Sonata into some chairs, but Sonata blocked one of Chucky T's moves and powerbombed him through the table. It was also a very mean-looking dive. Chuck did a bunch of dives, but he did one where, you know, kind of like how Okada does that one where he runs on the outside and dives over the guardrail to catch the guy.
Yeah.
Except Chucky T does the flipping version, and he landed and he just flicked everyone off. But it was a very good match. Chuck Taylor also hit the awful waffle. So you got to hear the Japanese announcer go, awful waffle, or whatever, however they pronounced it. But Sonata won with a combination Skull End and Muda-style moonsault. And he even closed the show by talking. Sonata's showing...
Speaking of what? Muda, didn't he... I think he... Didn't he retire this week?
Something like that. He did his last moonsault. Someone uploaded it.
Oh, okay.
But he might be gone because his knees have been bad for years.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they've been destroyed.
It's the way he does the moonsaults, man.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he always went low with that one. The moonsault's it's a cool move, but you have a problem, you know, you could have problems landing it a lot. Like I said, another reason why I worry about Charlotte doing that is if she keeps, you know, the way she doesn't land straight when she lands on her feet like a Kota Ibushi would. So I'm always worried that if she keeps landing the way she does, where she, it looks like she could buckle under. And then you have the people where they land and they hit their knees first. You got to be very careful. The best way to do it is kind of like how Chuck Taylor does it, where it's almost all, where it's basically all body. You're less likely to damage your legs doing it. Because if you're going to land on your feet, you got to land as straight as possible. Or, you know, land in a matter where your legs don't buckle under you. Alright, we got night 5 was the first of the semi or the quarterfinals or whatever. I skipped most of the opening stuff. Though I hear Toa Hinara actually won the tag match he was in, so good on him. I was going to fast forward the Lance Archer, Davey Boy Smith Jr. versus Yujiro and Tongaloa, but as I kind of like was fast forwarding, I ended up on a part where Yujiro was actually going all out on the guys. He was doing his moves. He was hitting the fisherman buster. He was doing the dive to the outside. I'm like, yeah, Yujiro's really fucking trying. I mean, he lost the match, but he was really fucking trying. Kota Ibushi and Chase Owens defeated Zack Sabre Jr. and Taka Michinoku, with Chase actually scoring the pinfall victory. Toriano, Tomohiro Ishii, and Chucky T defeated Los Ingobernables de Japón when Toriano did the roll-up pin on Bushi. And then we got our... I'd skip that match. Quarterfinal matches. Juice Robinson defeated Michael Elgin. This was actually built into an Elgin win, but Juice reversed, got out of the spinning powerbomb and locked in a really nice small package to win it. This was a pretty good match, but the crowd was not that deep into it until the end. I don't know. They might have been a little tired already. I don't know where they were wrestling, so could also just be the crowd. And then the main event, Tanahashi defeated Bad Luck Fale by countout. Pretty good match. But I would say the weakest of the top matches thus far. So I already did Thursday's show, but in case I want to repeat, tonight it's Sonata versus Yano and Zack Sabre Jr. versus Kota Ibushi for tonight's show. And then the rest of the shows we're not really going to know. Friday and Sunday will be the we'll have the semifinals on one night. There'll be one semifinal on each night. The Friday show's from Cork and Hall, so I'm sure they'll do a pretty strong lineup there. But for now, don't know. The Saturday show it goes Friday, Sunday. But the last show will actually be next Wednesday when we record. We'll be able to talk about it, and that will be. We'll find out later. So I can't tell you what the lineups for these next shows are, because it all depends on what happens tomorrow tonight. Yep. And then after that, the next show will be Strong Style Evolved, which I am going to. And then 4 days later after that, or a few days later after that, Thursday through Sunday will be the Sakura Genesis stuff. So, yeah. That's it right now for New Japan. Do you want to go through shows of the week real quick before we just talk about WWE and then news?
Yeah. Cause so, Raw, only thing noteworthy on Raw that I paid attention to was that apparently Ronda Rousey was not present there. Some people said that they were handing out Snickers to the crowd or something like that. It was some weird shit. I don't know what the hell was going on, but yeah, like, Raw, I guess, was weird. I think Braun Strowman ended up actually winning a tag team battle royal to get to face The Bar at WrestleMania. So far, it's only just him versus The Bar. Like, he hasn't had a tag team partner or whatever. I don't know what the fuck is going to go on with that. One thing was...
Well, they still don't have anything for Elias to do.
Yeah, well, that is true. That'd be funny if he picked him as a partner.
Yeah. Especially because he beat him to death with a giant stand-up bass.
Yeah.
Did you see that YouTube video someone made, How I Got Over, starring Braun Strowman?
No.
This guy, he took a bunch of clips of Braun Strowman just whooping ass. And he sung the song, like, Braun Strowman talks to some, I forget, some rock song, I forget what it is, but if you heard the beat, you'd be like, I've heard this rock song somewhere. Oh. But it's How I Got Over, and it's basically just him talking about how he just flips a bunch of shit, how Roman Reigns is going to get his, how he's going to clobber Brock Lesnar, and how you're going to get these hands.
Yeah.
It's pretty amusing, because it's basically the collection of Braun Strowman's greatest hits. But yeah, look it up on YouTube. It's pretty funny and kind of catchy. And I'm like, and it does have the scene where he comes out with the stand-up bass because it's part of the song.
Nice.
All right.
Yeah, and besides that, on Raw, the comedian Ha Ha Davis was front row for it. If you're not aware of his work, he's on he does like stand up stuff here and there, but he also does like this Instagram shit. You ever seen those like big fella Instagram videos that he does?
Who does? Huh?
Ha Ha Davis.
No, I am not.
He's.
I mean, most of what I follow on Instagram are artists and women, so.
Oh, yeah. I follow a good amount of these, quote-unquote, Instagram comedians and shit like that. So, But he's one of the more noteworthy ones. He was on Chance the Rapper's album Coloring Book. Yeah, he was on that shit. So he's doing something right. You don't want no zero problems, big fella. But yeah, he was on there, and then after the show was over, he was backstage with Titus Worldwide, which was interesting because, like, so he's a part of Titus Worldwide, but at the same time, during the video of them initiating him, he was, like, really, like trying to holler at, like, Dana Brooke, like, really hard. It was crazy. Like, the thing is that she felt, it looked like she was like, yeah, she was like trying to, she was into it and shit like that. And I think she ended up like following him on Instagram after that and started liking all this shit, which is really funny. But yeah, that was Raw. Didn't really pay too much attention. I think Finn Balor and Seth Rollins had a match. I think Balor ended up winning that one. But,
I saw GIFs of just basically just The Miz. Just stirring up shit.
Okay.
Yeah, like he was putting it together. There's some really funny gifs of him standing in the middle, you know, rubbing his hands like a supervillain and shit. Other people were like, were taking it like when a guy ships your same ship or something like that too. It was amusing. It's probably gonna be one of those gifs I see quite a bit now.
Oh god.
But you know, Miz still like. The top antagonist on fucking Raw.
Oh yeah, and speaking of Miz, I heard that he's changed his tune on CM Punk or whatever. Because I think he used to trash CM Punk for the whole UFC thing, but now he's hoping for the best for him and whatnot. Maybe.
Well, no, he has a kid. He's calmed down, except when it comes to trashing the burying wrestlers on the Miz TV.
Yeah.
That's where he does all his burying now.
Yeah. But, what else? So, SmackDown happened. I talked about the AJ Styles Rusev match, which was pretty good. Ended up getting interrupted by Aiden English, though, when it looked like Rusev was about to tap. So, that one ended in a DQ. I think it was Jimmy Uso and it was Jimmy Uso and Big E versus the Bludgeon Brothers, because all the other three guys got taken out. And so they had their match. They ambushed the Bludgeon Brothers before the match, but they still got their asses kicked. Like, they beat the fuck out of them. Like, the Bludgeon Brothers beat the shit out of them and just walked away. And that was it. And what else happened? Charlotte had a confrontation with Asuka, and so that match is definitely confirmed. Speaking of the women's shit, I think there was some weird shit on Raw where, like, Nia Jax was throwing a tantrum, I guess, because of Alexa Bliss or something like that.
Yeah, I didn't watch it, but my understanding is Alexa and Mickey were talking trash about Nia. And what's her name, Charlie Caruso? She kind of came in and pointed out that they were standing next to the fucking boom mic.
Oh.
Because I didn't know what was going on. I just saw this gif of her. It's like, you do see there's the boom mic right there, and they turned and looked at it. Yes. And then, like, 20 minutes later, I've seen gifs of Nia Jax screaming about Alexa and tearing stuff up, but I guess Alexa was talking about Nia Jax behind her back. Yeah.
And then one thing I did remember that I did see after the fact was Mickey James versus Asuka, which was actually pretty good. And then one thing that was noteworthy about the Charlotte Asuka confrontation, because after that confrontation, immediately after, Randy Orton's music hits, and then he goes down to the ramp, and then we're like, why? Because, like, I don't know if they were trying to press, they were pressed for time or some shit, and they needed to get him down there, like, immediately, but it just felt fucking awkward for them to just have this talk, this, like, confrontation and stare down, for Randy Orton to completely, like, show up out of the blue, and nothing's acknowledged. Apparently, it happened. Something similar happened last week, and then Bobby Roode had come out. So, people are, of course, blaming Road Dogg for all the bullshit that's going on.
Oh, well, man. He's not doing time management well enough.
Yeah.
And besides, I don't care about Randy Orton. He should not be coming out no matter what, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Yeah, fuck him. And what other shit happened that I paid attention to? Oh, yeah, Carmella beat Naomi. That was interesting. One thing that was funny was Carmella, after the fact, she posted a Photoshopped picture of a balding Naomi. So she snatched her bald and whatnot. And, of course, at the end of the show, Shane McMahon announces that he will be taking a leave of absence from the WWE for a while. But before he goes, he basically makes the match of Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens at WrestleMania. So, that match is going down, but Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn are not having it. They come down to the ring, they talk their shit to Shane, and then after that, they just decide to destroy him. So, yeah, he put up a fight for a little while, but got his ass kicked. I think they put the chair around his neck and tossed him into the ring post, dragged his ass from the outside of the from ringside all the way to the backstage, and then picked him up for a powerbomb on one of those like motorized lift thingies or whatever. But yeah, they fucked him up. They made sure that he was gone for a while. So I don't know how long Shane will be out of the picture. So.
Hopefully long, because I'm getting tired of on-screen authority figures.
Like,
I just.
Yeah, getting involved in shit.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the reasons why Dario Cueto from Lucha Underground was so good is even though he was always kind of involved, he pretty much was all out for himself. So he never really aligned necessarily with the Rudos.
Yeah.
Because if he had a vision and the Rudos were not part of it, he would just, you know, screw them over too.
Right.
I mean, it would always be interesting because he could do like a whole match with a Rudo and a Technico, and then he'll come out like, you know what, that was pretty good, let's have it again, or some shit like that.
Yeah,
and just
make
real calls, and it's like, you know what, I kind of dig this. And they used him also to further a full length, you know, series plot line. It wasn't like he was only focused on one or two things. He had his hands in everything. It just felt more natural. I just can't fucking deal with how that WWE keeps sort of recycling the same plot lines with their guys over and over. All right.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, that was SmackDown, and then 205 Live happened. It was the Japanese contingent versus the Lucha House Party of Lindsay and Grand Metalik. So Lindsay and Grand Metalik versus Hideo and Akira Tozawa. It was a pretty decent tag match. Some pretty dope back and forth for a little bit. And Hideo and Akira actually ended up winning, picking up the victory on that one with...
One of the American Lucha Twitters that does a lot of posting about Lucha Libre, he said that the... He thought the Lindsay Dorado and Grand Metalik dive thing they did towards the end,
yes,
where Lindsay jumped off of Dorado's back.
Yeah.
He called that one of the Dive of the Year contenders.
That was ridiculous. I saw that shit live, and I was like, what the fuck?
Like, yeah, I tuned in and caught that before I cut out to watch my television.
Like, he jumped... Like, that was some fucking serious-ass hype. Like... Any normal person jumping from that height would probably break their fucking legs. But that was crazy. That was some crazy ass shit. I commend them for that one. But that was towards the end, and after the after that, Hideo ended up picking up with the victory with his knee finisher thingy. I don't even know what the fuck it's called. Because it's not go to sleep anymore. He just does this twisting shit into a code breaker type dealio or whatever. So, I don't know. And then after that, he was basically gloating, standing over Grand Metalik like an asshole. And almost got in a fight with Lince and shit like that. So, it's pretty rough going in. I don't know. Maybe they're thinking about a cruiserweight tag title. I don't know. They might be. Because with the Drake Maverick pairing up Hideo and Akira out of the blue like this, and the Lucha House Party already being a thing, maybe that's the plan eventually. And then after that, of course, it ended up... ended up being Jack Gallagher versus a local jobber guy. Jack Gallagher looked fucking great in it. Just sheer brutality from him. Fantastic shit. Like, he's one of those guys that you should definitely look out for at some point. Cause like we all knew he's been good, but he can be like super great, you know? And after he picks up that victory, of course, is the first semifinals match, and it's Cedric Alexander versus Roderick Strong. If you haven't seen that match, definitely check
it out. I watched it after I watched New Japan today.
Yeah, but yeah, that match was fucking fantastic. I really enjoyed it. And Right Guy to Me won. Some people didn't like it because
those Roddy, people are fucking idiots.
Yeah, because some people wanted Roddy, but in the end, like, we all know this is supposed to be another Cedric Ali match at WrestleMania.
The people who, I don't know why anyone would, Roderick has no, there's no build for Roderick to be there other than that he's really, really good.
Yeah.
Cedric's been there from day one.
Yeah.
And he's been consistently one of the better parts of the show.
Yeah.
And you look at it anyway, I mean, they would build to him and Ali would be the best idea. But even if they decided to go heel versus face for the classic thing, Drew Gulak would still work pretty well in that because of the whole Enzo's crew versus Alexander, Mustafa Ali, and all those guys.
Right.
So, I mean, Roderick is a talented wrestler, and if he was to challenge for the title later, that's fine. But narratively speaking, realistically, this is the either Alexander or Mustafa Ali's tournament to lose.
Right.
I'll be surprised if Ali doesn't beat Drew Gulak, but I wouldn't be surprised because going into the semifinals, Gulak and Mustafa Ali are the only ones that. Are one of the only ones that have history with each other in singles match competition. Mm-hmm. Like, because they had a series of matches on their thing, including a 2 out of 3 falls match last year that was pretty good.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah, this is definitely all Alexander. I mean, Roddy looked good in his matches. I didn't watch any of them, but I assume he did. He looked good here. It had to be Alexander.
Yeah.
I want him to go to WrestleMania because of that whole thing during Cruiserweight Classic when he said that his preacher told him he should quit wrestling because he'd never make it.
Right. that's
I want him to go to fucking WrestleMania, get the fucking title, go back there and say, huh, yeah, what?
And that shit better not be on the fucking pre-show.
at this rate, man, if it ain't on the pre-show, this show's going to be, the show's going to be 100 hours anyway.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, but right now we're looking at the two title matches.
Yeah,
we're looking at probably a triple threat U.S. title match.
Right.
A triple threat IC title match.
Right.
A handicap tag match, a triple threat tag match, two women's singles matches.
Yeah.
The Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal. Oh shit, that is some bullshit. The Cruiserweight title match Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. I mean,
don't forget the Andre one. You forgot about the
Andre one and the mixed tag match at the end. If that's all on the regular show, that show is going to be 6 fucking hours. I can only imagine some of this stuff has to end up on the pre-show. I put the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal on the pre-show, to be honest with you.
I'd shove both Battle Royals on the pre-show.
Yeah.
Shove both of those. I don't know what else would be on the pre-show, though.
Yeah, I mean, I want all the title matches on the main show. Yeah, but I don't want them to cut. If I had to put any of the title matches on the pre-show, I honestly can't. The closest I would think is the Bar versus Braun Strowman, but you need Braun Strowman on the main show.
Right.
But you can't put the IC title on, I don't think. I mean, Seth Rollins, Miz, and Finn Balor, that's probably going to be Dynamite.
Yeah.
I mean, I put Randy Orton, Jinder Mahal, and... Oh,
yeah.
Yeah,
Randy Orton, Jinder Mahal, and Bobby Roode is most likely going to be on the pre-show.
But it's Randy Orton. Would they put him on the pre-show?
Yeah. Fuck Randy Orton.
I mean, believe me, I would love it. I think the only thing that would solve this is if they just stop calling it a fucking pre-show and just say that's how the show starts.
Oh, yeah, that's the best solution. Just don't call it a fucking pre-show.
You can do a two-disc DVD release, WWE.
The show is too long to have a pre-show these days. Like,
yes, what was it like? I mean, it was, what, 5 hours last year plus the pre-show?
And to be honest, what the fuck is up with a pre-show when you're airing it?
Yeah, like I mean, and when you're at the WrestleMania, how even their pre-show still has half the crowd is still half the crowd still filtered in, but those front rows are already fucking full.
Yeah, there's enough film already.
They want to be there. Those tag matches, two or 3 years worth of great tag matches on the pre-show. There are people who want to fucking see what's going to happen. Remember that pre-show where they had the Four Corners tag match with like the New Day. What was it, like Cesaro and Tyson Kidd and the Usos and someone else whatever?
Yeah.
And that was like the best fucking match on the entire show. Yeah, just give us the 7-hour show. Just stop calling it a fucking pre-show. Now, should we talk about how idiotic naming the Fabulous Moolah Battle Royal is? Or should we save that for news and go through these cards of the week real quick?
Shit. You know what? Let's go ahead and talk about that shit.
Alright. So, if you do not know, Fabulous Moolah was a terrible fucking person. And a blight on the world of wrestling. Her history is tied deeply with WWE, especially the WWF Women's title, the original. However, is what she's accused of. Number one, she didn't really train the women. She had other women train them. Then she would take 25% of all their booking. If they pissed her off, she would have them blacklisted. Number two, she made the women live on property that her and her husband owned, and she would make them pay rent and utilities. Number three, she would send these women out as sexual favors to promoters, and some of these women would be assaulted and raped. Four, apparently she once sent a teenage Luna Vachon to do a photo shoot by herself at 16. Number five, a little less mean, but the reason there is no women's tag division now is because there used to be, but for some reason I was trying to understand it. Fabulous Moolah and someone else tried to, I guess, screw with the booking on an upcoming match that the Jumping Bomb Angels from Japan had, and they were like the hottest tag team in Japan at the time. These women were fucking superstars. The ascension of All Japan Women's Wrestling in a lot of ways is built on them and the Crush Girls. They were basically pop stars in the mid to late 80s. But for some reason, Fabulous Moolah lied about something. The Angels dropped the tag titles because I thought that was what they were supposed to do. WWE was like, what the fuck? That wasn't what happened. And not only did they phase out the tag team titles, they did not put the planned women's tag title match on WrestleMania 4 card. Four women lost out on a WrestleMania payday.
Wow.
Fabulous Moolah should not have a fucking battle royal named after her. And the thing is, a lot of this is coming out now, but a lot of it has been hinted at, because if you watch some of the women, I guess, just didn't feel comfortable talking about it at the time, but even like Penny Banner, she was a little bit more upfront about it in the Lipstick and Dynamite documentary, when she talked about being blacklisted because of Fabulous Moolah and the dirty tactics. And apparently Fabulous Moolah was also very would take privileges with her female trainees, if you get what I'm saying.
Oh, God.
But, however, she would not want any of her women to date women.
Yeah. Huh.
You know. So she was a bitch.
I heard, I think Mad Maxine gave a statement also. And basically she said that, yeah, she would screw them over when it came to pay. That's why it was her, Luna Vachon, and like a couple other women who just straight up left. Like, peaced out and found their own way after dealing with her. So, and then, yeah, she was definitely also talking about how, yeah, you could have named this fucking battle royal for anybody but her. including Wendy Riker and a couple other.
Or Mildred Burke. But yeah. I guess Mildred Burke didn't have any sort of history with WWE. Yeah. But, I mean, she was a women's star before Fabulous Moolah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's fucking idiotic. I mean, they could have... I thought it was better... Like, I understand to some degree why they wouldn't name it after China. But for all of China's problems, she didn't actively screw over women.
True.
If they, you know, they could have just, like... If it really came down to it, they could have just called it the Trish Stratus Battle Royal, and I would have been fine.
Yep.
I'd have been like, well... other women, but as long as they didn't name after Moolah.
I think one of the main criteria, I feel like they gotta be like old or retired.
Alright, then how about Sherry Martel Battle Royal?
Yeah.
We'll get the sensational Sherry Battle Royal.
Shit, even Miss Elizabeth, because like she's had more to do with WrestleMania than a good amount of women. Like, even though she wasn't wrestling.
Moolah's biggest WrestleMania moat was screwing Wendy Richter out of the title. And they screwed her out of the belt. Just because she wanted to actually make real money and not, you know, give 35% to Moolah or some shit. Some bullshit. All right. I got my rant out the way. You want to do Charge of the Weekend real quick?
All right, let's get
quick before you get to the rest of it. All right, first up... NWL, National Wrestling League, is, like I said, they have a show every weekend. This weekend, the show is on the 16th. I think that's Friday. So Friday in St. Louis at the Elks Lodge, St. Louis, Missouri. Well, it's actually O'Fallon, Missouri, but whatever. It's close to that. Then we got some here. This is what's coming on. It's not actually much happening on Powerbomb Television until next Thursday, these shows go up on Thursday, so next Thursday, look out for, it's next Tuesday, that's weird, IWM South is doing a Tuesday night wrestling show, alright, so yeah, I don't have a lineup of matches, but it'll be on Powerbomb TV, so IWA Mid-South. Then let's get to the two big, really bigger ones. We have the first stage in the Lions Cup 14 from Chikara. We got non-title matches include a grudge match between Ophidian and Fire Ant, and then a pair of qualifying matches for actual the Tag World Grand Prix, which includes the Rumble Bees of Solo Darling and Travis Hucklebee versus the Whisper and Snow Troll. I don't know if this is a new Snow Troll or the same Solo Troll, as well as Oceania, which is I think it was Ashley Vox or the other girl who changed her name. And Burlock teaming up with two guys returning to Chikara and who teamed in AIW, but to Infinity and Beyond's Colin Delaney and Cheech Hernandez. those might actually be pretty good. But here we go. Here are the Lion Cup qualifying matches. We have Omari versus the New Green Ant versus Brett Domino versus Percy Davis. I think one of these guys is from Billy Rock's House Rock School. Green Ant obviously represented Chikara. We have Fuego del Sol, and then the second one is Fuego del Sol versus Blanche Babish, who is a new graduate of the Chikara Wrestle Factory, versus Dylan Bostic versus D.L. Hurst. We have the third one is Airwolf versus Geddy Calhoun versus Eli Isom, who I think is representing the Ring of Honor Wrestle Academy or whatever it's called, versus Cam Zagami. And then the last of the qualifying matches is Cajun Crawdad versus Gabby Ortiz, representing the Women of Honor, versus Anthony Green versus Super Beetle, who's representing all of California, as someone said online. So those are your matches. The second part of this will take place at...
So I just wanted to say some weird segue. I didn't know, because have you seen that movie Game Night?
Yeah.
Yeah, that new movie with Jason Bateman and shit?
Yeah, I saw it the weekend it came out.
Yeah, I didn't know fucking Chad Lale was in it, because I didn't recognize him. You know, Gunner?
Was he?
From TNA?
Oh, vaguely. I remember the name. I don't remember if I ever watched him wrestle.
Yeah, like, apparently he was in it, and you remember that scene where, Rachel McAdams is outside the plane, and the guy has a gun on her, and,
and he dies.
He gets murked. Yeah, that's him.
That was a good scene, especially where it's like, I have kids, and he was like,
not with ass like that. Yeah. Yo, but
she
yeah,
was
that
like,
was
oh,
him.
Thank you. And then he dies. She's like, yeah, oh.
Yo, but that was a great fucking movie.
I really like that film.
Yeah. I was just going through his Instagram because you know he's on the NXT, right?
No, I did not actually.
He's been in NXT since I think late last year or something like that. So interesting. Everybody's getting appearing in movies and TV shows these days. It's shit.
Gotta make that money.
Because I remember, Percy Watson was on Atlanta 3 weeks ago. Well, 2 weeks ago. Yeah, 2 weeks ago. Yeah. So.
All right. The second stage of the Young Lions Cup thing will take place on the end of the month. So we'll talk about that later. But right now, we got the Throwbacks versus Legion of Rot for that show. And then finally, AAW has a show happening. Come on, Twitter. There we go. All right. It is called Epic. We have Zachary Wentz and Desmond Xavier versus Trey Miguel and I think it's Stephen Wolfe. We have MJF versus Paco, Teddy Hart and Joey Janela versus OI4K, Eddie Kingston versus Sammy Callahan, Zima Ion versus Myron Reed, Moose versus Keith Lee, the besties in the world, which are Davey Vega, Matt Fitchett teaming up with Colt Cabana versus Kurt Stallion, Braxton and Jake something. We have Jessica Havoc putting her women's title on the line against Hudson Endy. And the main event, I'm assuming this is the main event, is David Starr and Trevor Lee taking on ACH and Jushin Thunder Liger. And those are the cards that I found. And trust me, when we get around to WrestleMania weekend, there's gonna the cards of the weekend thing is going to take a whole shitload longer. There's some great matches lined up, too. I'm telling you, man.
Oh, yeah.
I got most of the CZW card written down. Though House of Hardcore seems like they don't want to announce anything. But, yeah. So those are our card weekend, and now we are going to talk about news. Are you ready for some news? All right, let me pull up, because there was some serious Triple A news that happened at their Rey de Rey show, which I didn't talk about because I always forget to mention the Lucha Libre shows, which means that there is a Lucha, there is a CMLL show on Friday that will be streaming on Claro Sports or Facebook. But here we go. So, you ready for some AAA news? Here we go.
Yep.
Rey de Rey was a mess with timing issues with the show starting late and so much time devoted to Vampiro on the Twitch feed. Wagner Jr. had his interview time cut out after his loss to his son. The Phantasma versus Tejano match was rushed and spots were cut out that involved Bengala and El Hijo del Torontes. They had to rush off the air because they were late. So the fans on Twitch didn't see Tejano get his head shaved bald. Tejano, when he found out, flipped out and screamed at Vampiro and had to be pulled away and calmed down. Another day of some AAA nonsense. So that's the AAA news. Now let me pull up my other bits. I just saved that from a bit from Twitter. Okay, this was just recently happened. New Japan is TV Asahi and Bushiroad. Bushiroad owns New Japan. TV Asahi airs it. They're going to be NJPW will be part of their presentation at something called Sportal Asia or something like that. It's a marketing and media management convention about sports brands all across Asia. So this might be an opportunity for them to expand their reach to other Asian countries such as China, Taiwan, Korea, whatever. So this could be very big for how much attention in TV they can get. So good luck to them on that one. And finally, Kimberly or Abby Lathe was released along with some other NXT wrestlers, including Sage Beckett. Kimberly has already put together a bunch of major bookings, including she will be doing the Beyond Wrestling Chikara Pro doubleheader. She will be, I believe, on the Shimmer shows, including the WrestleMania weekend show and the show, I think the show is the weekend after. She is also, because she just got released, Chikara felt very happy about announcing their second trio for King of Trios with Kimberly re-teaming with Los Ice Cream. So, yeah. They her first King of Trios, actually I think it was her second King of Trios tournament, she teamed with Los Ice Creams. Her first, every King of Trios she's done was a different team. She did it with, was it Jervis Cottonbelly and Jolly Roger? It was Jolly Roger and someone else. Then the next year she teamed with Los Ice Creams. And then the year after that she teamed with Oleg the Usurper and Estonian Thunder Frog. But yeah, if you remember, they did the Contest of Champions thing where with the stables, it was her, Jervis Cottonbelly, and Los Ice Creams were actually dead last during like the first half of that tournament until the end after one team got disqualified and they pulled together wins and they ended up beating the Devastation Corporation in the finals. And that same night, she cashed in to win the Grand Championship. So obviously, Kimberly is making her return to Chikara. Looking to whoop some ass. And that is all I have for news.
News, news, and news. And news. Alright, so I guess it's my turn. Get down to this nitty gritty. Forbes had announced earlier in the week, or was it last week? I don't fucking know. But, Vince McMahon is officially a billionaire. Like, officially. So
did he do this despite CM Punk?
I don't know.
Because remember when CM Punk made a bit about how Vince should be a billionaire, but he wasn't smart enough?
Yeah. But apparently he is. I forgot the exact number. I think it was like $1.8 billion or something like that.
When XFL fails again, we can take a good $500 million off of that.
Hell yeah. Oh shit. But yeah, congratulations to him, I guess. What other news? Lucha Underground They had basically wrote a nasty letter to Ryan Satin, basically telling him to cease and desist with reporting spoilers.
Oh yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah, so there.
I saw that and I was like, "That's some stupid shit."
Yeah, some dumb shit. Like people caught a lot of different, even Deadspin caught like reported on that shit too. So it actually got a good amount of attention. So that's not good on them at all. What else? And besides Abby Lath being released, Sage Beckett and a male Chinese recruit were also released at the same time from their NXT contracts.
At this rate, they're going to release all their Chinese wrestlers.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised because, like, half of them are probably still green. Even the one that popped up on the Royal Rumble last year probably still can't wrestle that well. I wouldn't be surprised because he hasn't popped up in anything since.
No, I did like the one woman who was at the Mae Young Classic for the little bit she did.
Yeah, I remember her. Yeah, I liked her. But yeah, Sage Beckett, if you remember her, she was in TNA. And while she was in TNA, she was a lot heavier. I think she was able to drop weight and get her life together and ended up getting signed to NXT, but I guess it didn't work out. Damn shame. Hopefully she'll be able to get picked up by a whole bunch of indie promotions too. Maybe she'll end up back on Impact Wrestling. They're doing okay, I guess. but I did hear that AAA's president wants to buy Impact. You heard that?
No. The only thing I know about Impact lately is, I forget which, I think EC3, what was the other one? Eli Drake?
Yeah.
He tweeted at Chuck Taylor about coming to Impact, and Chuck Taylor said, "Now you know no one watches that show."
It's fucked up. Chuck Taylor's like, "Bitch, I'm in New Japan right now. Fuck out of here."
I know.
He's like, "I finally made it." Like, "I finally made it. You want me to go to Impact?" Like, what?
Yeah, it was interesting. It's like after the main event, he was like, "You know what? I'm starting to think I'm in a dream."
Yo, dude, like that shit can't be reality.
Yeah, I mean,
he's like, "I finally made it."
I mean, like what? Like a month prior, Jim Cornette said he shouldn't be booked anywhere.
Oh yeah,
that was ass. That one. See, now I think any goal of any wrestler is to get insulted by Jim Cornette because that means you have a serious opportunity to do something.
Oh, most definitely.
Is like, these guys suck. Uh-oh, it looks like I'm about to break through. Let me get my merch ready. About to make that money. I got that Jim Cornette anti-seal of approval.
Wow. Oh, wow. And then, you know that steroid ring shit? I think they're supposed to air the documentary soon. And, like, a lot of people were saying that, like, they might have actually confused Roman Reigns with Luther Reigns in it. I don't know what the fuck is going on.
Is that what that Luther Reigns shit was online?
Yeah.
I was like, what the fuck was everyone talking about?
They're saying that it may not have been Roman Reigns, but it could have been actually Luther Reigns that they were talking about. Which actually makes a little bit of sense. Luther Reigns has ties to Hollywood and other people who have been implicated in this ring have been Hollywood actors. So it does make a little bit of sense, I guess. I don't know. But we'll see when the documentary comes out. I heard it's coming out pretty soon, though. Yeah, besides that, did you see that tweet that that Sienna posted last week?
Something about if you're you should have companies fly you out instead of flying out there and possibly taking a job from someone else or something like that.
Right, yeah.
I have mixed feelings about what it was about. I get the idea that if you're worth it you should be flown out, but you know, if you're a professional wrestler starting out, you gotta travel no matter what, regardless.
Yeah. So like if you're not big shit, you know, in the independent scene and you're looking to, like, make your mark, like, there's been guys who've done that. Like, I remember Mandrews and Pete Dunne. They've basically come forward and said, like, yeah, like, we took a chance and actually flew ourselves out to the United States and cut our...
Yeah, and she said she wasn't talking about, like, countries and stuff, but I mean, it's still kind of the same idea.
See, but she said...
I mean, because, like, Zack Sabre Jr., first time I saw him was at a Chikar show. He basically... I don't know if he was invited out here, but he basically flew out and did a bunch of American shows.
Yeah.
This is before he went, you know, some years before he ended up in NOAH.
Yeah. Because, let me remember.
It's a weird thing. I know Jimmy Jacobs and Josh Alexander were joking that if they flew out themselves to a show, that wouldn't mean they would get booked over the Young Bucks.
Right. Right. Yeah, that it does. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, you still book who can draw, you know?
Yeah, you book who can draw, but for some companies, like, they're not going to be able to book who draws. They're going to book who shows up.
Who shows up, yeah. I guess.
Yeah, I mean, IWA Mid-South isn't going to, you know, if you flew out to do an IWA Mid-South show because you know they have Powerbomb TV, you're probably going to get booked because they don't have the money to book fucking Young Bucks or Cody Rhodes or anybody.
Right.
I mean, shit. They're taking their life in their hand every time they book Elgin now. So.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. But at the same time,
but at the same time, flying out to go, like, try to get booked for a show, she's basically saying that you're taking money off of other people's plates. But it seems like the people's plates that she would be talking about are people that are more established.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a hard thing because I equate a lot of it more to, like, rock bands trying to come up and traveling.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't think you'd have a lot of wrestlers who are flying themselves out unless they're literally flying to another country because that shit costs money.
Yeah.
You can't, you know, if you get a booker who agrees to book you and you fly yourself out, you know, I mean, I guess it does seem like they're kind of taking advantage of you. Like, well, I don't really have to, I mean, whatever the indie wrestler pays the dude is probably not going to be enough to cover the flight.
Right.
And if you're not, you know, talent, you're not going to sell that much merch, but if you're looking to get experience, I mean, I'm more, to me, I don't see the flying thing as being that major of a problem because
right.
A lot of these motherfuckers who need experience, they're not flying, they're driving.
Yeah.
And they're usually driving with groups of friends or they're driving with their guys they know already booked on the show.
Yeah. And but the thing,
I mean,
yeah,
who exactly
point,
is flying and stealing bookies?
Yeah. See, but the point that Sienna was talking about is like, she made it clear in her tweet that it was people who were actually flying overseas, like to different countries, to go do their and get booked. You know, so like, I don't know what she wanted to get out of like the tweet. I guess besides, like, I think Gail Kim tried to interject, basically saying like, yeah, if you're worth. Like, don't let these promoters take advantage of you. But at the same time, they're looking at the perspective of an established talent. That's the way it seems like. Period. Plain and simple.
Well, yeah. Well, but that's stupid. I mean, if you to be established talent, especially if you're trying to establish yourself internationally, you have to go that extra mile. And I understand the point that you have your internet, you're able to, you could still connect using that better. But, you know, you still have to get yourself in front of people.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you have internet or you have a YouTube show. If people can't watch you wrestle, it's not going to help. Mm-hmm. If, you know, because there's a bunch of people who don't watch European wrestling, but they know European wrestling.
Right.
And part of the reason we know guys like Marty Scurll, Zack Sabre Jr., is because they traveled around the world. But particularly, you know, Pete Dunne, Mark Andrews, those are example of guys who did that. But if you want to flip it, Quiet Storm from the States flew to Japan.
Yep.
Originally to try to find training.
Right.
And now he's in fucking, he's a tag team champion. And no, I mean, it took him years to establish himself. Yeah. But, I mean, there are waves of these Australian wrestlers who don't have the access to that kind of training that they have to, if they're in the position where they can fly out of Australia to the States to make a few shows, they're going to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, though, I guess the Australian market will probably be the next one. I'm thinking Robbie Eagles is going to be popping out.
There was one, I think there was one Australian dude who ended up flying to Maryland for some odd reason. I don't know why. Like, I think MCW Wrestling took, made a post about him on their Instagram, and I checked his Instagram, and, dude is, not known whatsoever. So, there's dudes, I guess flying themselves out, trying to get their connections going, you know?
Yeah,
they're taking a chance.
They want to fly out to the United States or to Japan to get attention, or even Mexico. Those are your three biggest markets.
Yeah.
You have to, Lita literally went to Mexico to learn how to train to be a wrestler. I mean, she wasn't a wrestler before she went there, but she had a plan to do that. I mean, in a lot of ways, them traveling out of the state is also another part of their training.
Right.
Wrestling is continuously
that's
learning.
I think Ricochet made a point on saying, it's kind of like people paying for school, you know? In a way, it's like people paying for school, additional schooling, you know?
Yeah, you got guys who do seminars to learn. You got guys who realize that for them to learn, they have to travel. And in some cases, moving to different countries and stuff helps establish you. I mean, Timothy Thatcher pretty much had to move to fucking Germany to get that second win going.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
They fucking love him in Germany now.
Yeah. Shit, same with Alexander James. He did that shit too. Because, no one gave a shit about him in CZW back in the day. I think he was, their junior. I think he had resurrected the junior heavyweight title at some point and was just carrying it around for a while. And he was having decent matches and whatever. But then he ends up going to fucking WXW, and he's the fucking prince doing big things and shit, and big things popping, all that. So, he's doing really well for himself. I think he's a trainer over there, too. So he's a wrestler, and he's a trainer over there. So, people are going, and I highly doubt that they fucking flew him out. I feel like he just took the chance and then established himself, you know? That's another Maryland guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably easier to get flown out now than it was 5-10 years ago, but still some wrestlers have to take advantage because they're in areas where they're not capable to get in front of the crowds they need to, where they're not allowed to, they're not in a position to get to the shows, to get to the certain crowds. They have to, you can only rely on word of mouth or, your Twitter for a certain amount of time. You have to travel. And in some cases, you have to go out farther, especially if you don't live in the East Coast area where Philadelphia down or New York down to essentially where you are. You're kind of screwed as a wrestler. Maybe the Midwest too, because there are promotions in Indiana, obviously in Ohio. There's some stuff there you can travel around, but that's it. If you're a wrestler in California, it's very hard to get out of California.
Yeah,
I mean, PWG only now is starting to go back to booking motherfuckers from California with their next show, because I mean, they're finally booking Eli Everfly. This guy's been wrestling in California for years. And the only reason he's getting booked is probably because of GCW. Because GCW took a chance on him.
Yeah,
Super Dragon.
GCW's taking a chance on a good amount of people, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't know. This is a very... It's a different process for every wrestler. Now, you can't really you shouldn't be able to think that there's one way to do things. There are people who get into wrestling very differently. I mean, wrestling isn't structured like any other sort of wrestling is more structured like the music industry in a lot of ways. You have to, you can either get the demo, get a job really quickly, you can do your own thing and build your own thing, or you're doing a lot of traveling, build up a fan base before you get assigned to a company and, you know, like that. I don't know. I followed some of it, but I ultimately felt the whole thing was really fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I don't care how they're getting booked as long as the shows themselves are good.
Yeah.
And who knows if, you know, and there are guys that get flown out who don't really give a shit anyway.
Yeah.
One of the complaints about, what's his name? El Hijo del Fantasma, a.k.a. King Corno, is that he's so full of himself that when he does do shows in the States, they're still not that good. Like, he has all the potential in the world to be good, but he thinks he's the hottest shit, and he doesn't try as much.
Isn't he supposed to be at, is he at the new CZW event?
Maybe. I didn't see him listed on any of the CZW stuff.
Shit. He's on some event in the States. Oh, no, no, no. No, that's, no, I forgot. It's not that. It's fucking, Impact versus Lucha Underground. They're doing one of those things.
Yeah, I have the only two matches they lined up, they announced listed here.
Yeah.
But yeah. Shit. So we got, damn. Yeah, those shows are going to be ridiculous. We got, we'll talk about this later, but so far for WrestleMania weekend, on Thursday would be GCW, some Matt Riddle Presents Bloodsport, Beyond Wrestling's Lit Up, Wildcats promotion, that's the New Orleans promotion, the WrestleCon Super Show, Evolve 102, the Friday is GCW's Joey Janela's Spring Break.
Oh, yeah.
Then we have The Crash, Rev Pro, UK show, Impact versus Lucha Underground, Evolve 103, the WWN Super Show, Saturday, Pro Wrestling Revolver, then House of Hardcore, CZW, Shimmer 100, WWN's Style Battle, Kaiju Big Battle, Ring of Honor's Super Card of Honor.
Yo, it amazes me that Kaiju Big Battle is still a thing.
Yeah.
I remember when I was a kid, I used to watch, because they used to broadcast Kaiju Big Battle on TV. Did you know that?
I vaguely remember it. They did that. I never actually watched it, but I've seen clips of it.
I think it was on I want to say it was G4. Like, they had this, like kids, like, block. Like, it was, like, some Hasbro, like, the special Hasbro block.
Yeah.
And they had, like, it had Kaiju Big Battle and a couple other shows and stuff like that on it. And, Loud and Noxious was the host of that block. It was, pretty interesting. It was a pretty interesting time. God, I missed that.
Yeah. It does feel weird that they're still, doing it, because you never hear about it too often anymore. Yeah. I mean, it was like the next big thing for a while, but then it just sort of, whoop.
Yeah.
I don't know if the guys behind it have been busy. And it was interesting that the brief minute where they had that connection with Akara because of Dr. Cube.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember that shit. Yeah,
One of my favorite bits was when, what's his name? Jakob Hammermeyer disguised himself as Dr. Cube for a while.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he had the Coogee sweater.
Yeah.
The Coogee sweater on. Yeah, I remember that shit. Yeah. Oh, I miss those days. Damn, I miss Yaku. Yeah.
I'm actually going to give Chikara a try with, like I said, they're doing all these tournaments this year between Young Lions Cup, World Tag Grand Prix, King of Trios, and they brought back the Lethal Lottery Tag Tournament. Which is a fascinating one where it's just they mix up the roster so you can have, you know, rivals as tag partners and stuff like that. That's how they how they united Lince Dorado and Jimmy Olsen as a tag team for a period of time. Hmm. But, yeah, so I'll probably check that out. You know, if I'm spending money, that is.
Oh, man. Okay, what other news we got? Soo Young was in the news a little bit. She finally broke her silence. I think before that she had made a post about her availability for bookings, but then after that she had posted about basically sticking by Rich Swann. She basically defended him, saying that he's no danger to anyone, blah, blah, blah. All this shit, and this came on the heels of him canceling a whole bunch of shows that he was supposed to appear on. So, I don't know what the fuck is going on. I'm just hoping for the best for them, I guess.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, yada. With other legal shit, seems as soon as he got medically cleared, he got in trouble. So, Jeff Hardy was arrested for DWI on Saturday night. After he got in an accident, I think he had, like, hit something, I don't know if it was a guardrail or something like that, and ended up spinning off of the road or whatever, and, they had found that his blood alcohol was, 3 times the legal limit. WWE ended up giving a statement saying that, whatever his personal shit is, that's his business, whatever. And I think Matt Hardy mentioned something about it. He didn't really... I think he was still in, like, character when he mentioned it or something like that. And Jeff Hardy is actually supposed to be in the Ultimate Deletion. He filmed his parts of it before the incident. And the Ultimate Deletion should be airing next week, I believe. Next Monday. So that should be interesting. So maybe that's something worth actually watching Raw for. And yeah, just for a little bit, just for a little bit. what else is there? Ric Flair. I believe he's doing a little bit of acting. So good on him. And speaking on acting, there is supposed to be a taping for that show. You ever heard that show, Drop the Mic?
No, I don't think so.
I believe it's on TBS. It's on TBS, and it's basically a rap battle show. And they got these celebrities who aren't rappers or whatever to compete against each other. Well, apparently they're doing one for WWE versus GLOW. So they have the Bella Twins, Carmella, and Alicia Fox versus Kate Walsh, Jackie Tone, Sunita Mani, and Brittany Young. So the actors from GLOW and some WWE women's wrestlers will be kicking some freestyles and trying to diss each other, yo. So yeah.
Kate Walsh is an actual musician singer, so hope she washes them all.
Yeah, she. Where is she from? Like Australia or some shit? I don't know, or is it England?
I thought she was from Britain
or somewhere. I know it's overseas. I don't know. It's whatever.
Like all white people are from the same place. Hell.
Whatever. It's whatever. Same difference. Australia, South Africa, Great Britain. It's all the same. If you're white.
You're white, you believe you own the place. Fuck you.
Oh, man. And speaking of more actors, Super Troopers, the Broken Lizard crew, they were at SmackDown event. They took a whole bunch of pictures backstage and at the arena and all that nice jazz. But they also filmed something for WWE. You know, WWE has their whole WWE game night. I believe that usually airs on their YouTube every now and then. And they have them competing in a game of dodgeball. So it's the Super Troopers guys versus Breezango, Renee Young, Heath Slater, Sami Zayn, and Ty Dillinger.
That was interesting for the fact that they got a whole bunch of Canadians and Fandango and Heath Slater. And then, what else happened? Yeah. Ronda Rousey, I talked about that. Apparently, like, Ronda Rousey didn't appear on Raw, but she showed up on Ellen, on Tuesday afternoon. So I thought that was interesting that she didn't show up on Raw, but ended up there instead.
Well, she probably got seen by more people on Ellen anyway.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Gotta help WWE promote their shit. Gotta do that. What else? Apparently there's supposed to be some type of Blue's Clues reboot. And allegedly John Cena is in the running for it. There was like some type of like Nickelodeon Live event that he ended up coming out in basically Joe's old gear, you know, the classic like dark green, light green, like button up shirt with the oversized notepad and crayons and all that shit like that. And that actually got the original Steve Burns, who was the original human host of that show. He stated that it should be an average Joe as he is a regular Joe. Ironically, Joe actually being the second human host of that show, with a regular house. And I keep saying human host like it's a fucking symbiote. But yeah, apparently the front runners are allegedly John Cena and a possible female host of Blue's Clues. So, it'll be interesting. Would it make sense, a female host? Because isn't Blue a female dog?
Maybe. I think
Blue's a female.
Color matching where it was blue boys and pink for girls, it used to actually be opposite.
Really? Huh.
Yeah, that a lot of that it was not uncommon for young boys to wear pink. It was actually considered a not necessarily a manly color, but a color that was fine. But when the rise of department stores and catalogs, mm-hmm. they began these like Montgomery Ward, they began to color coordinate for boys and girls. So it's just a product of capitalism.
Speaking of Montgomery Ward, yeah, there used to be a lot of those in Maryland. Back in the day, I remember when I was a kid, there used to be one in the 90s and shit like that. And now, I believe, they have this big ass, like, huge, it used to be like this multi-story Montgomery Ward in our city. And now, it's basically been converted into, like, a building with just multiple, like, offices. So, like, they have, like, the environmental, pop agency, like the Maryland's and the MDE, Maryland Department of the Environment or some shit like that, and fucking United Way charity and a whole bunch of shit like that. And it's like a building with a whole bunch of companies in it, like a mini museum and like some type of dope ass food court that I never got to go into. So
Montgomery Ward is essentially dead. It died in 2001, but it's 2004. It became a catalog marketer of something or like other. But they were they started out in 1872. They were for the longest time the longest running department store.
Yeah. Shit. And then
I forgot to mention that because of Trent's injury, he might not be at the WrestleCon show. Chuck Taylor has been tweeting people, asking for them to be his partner in the match against the Golden Lovers.
Oh, God.
He tweeted Johnny Gargano after Gargano got fired and said, "Johnny boy, prove that you're fired. Be my tag team partner, or no one will believe you." And he also tweeted John Cena saying, hey, you want to be my partner since you can't forget a WrestleMania match?
Yeah.
Oh, so, shit. I mean, I would mark the fuck out if they were able to pull that shit out. Yeah. But that's not going to happen. But could you imagine someone at WWE like, why the fuck not?
Why not? Oh, shit. John Cena, when is that movie Blockers coming out?
Is
it next month?
Well, I think I won't. I want to say next weekend, because this weekend is Tomb Raider and maybe A Quiet Place.
Oh, man, A Quiet Place. I don't even know if that's going to be airing in my theater. Because, like, even though it's an AMC theater...
I saw
theater,
an early review. Oh, an early review for it was good. Actually, Blockers doesn't come out until April 6th.
Oh, April 6th. Okay, nice.
So it comes out WrestleMania weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, so basically, WrestleMania weekend is like, okay, between Thursday and Sunday, what am I gonna do? Because it's like that kayfabe news thing said, the pre-show for WrestleMania started right after Fastlane.
Right.
That's all it fucking is. Because you're gonna have, NXT is Saturday, Hall of Fame, which I'm probably gonna skip, is fucking Friday. You have all the stuff on the WWE Network that will be happening. You have all the indie shows. It's going to be fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, I've heard good things about Blockers, though, so I might check that out.
Yeah, I saw an early review give pretty good reviews. Let me see. Is The Quiet Place out this weekend? I know Tomb Raider is the big movie coming out this weekend that'll probably lose to... Black Panther, because everything is going to lose to Black Panther.
Yep.
Actually, no, Quiet Place comes out April 6th, too.
Oh, okay.
Oh. Huh. So, you have a horror movie or a thriller, I don't know exactly.
Yeah, I might check out Tomb Raider. I might check out Tomb Raider this weekend, maybe. Because I haven't heard great things about it, but I might just go see it anyway.
It's been very mixed right now.
Yeah.
I'm concerned for Ready Player One, because I read the book, but the closer we get to the movie, the more I just want the movie to exist. That's basically the best I can say about it. I mean, even in retrospect, I'm trying to remember what I liked about the book.
Oh, man.
It wasn't a bad book. When I finished reading it, I'm like, I can't believe they're making this a movie.
Oh, man. And then,
especially because I think they're going to mess up the black character.
Of course. Of course. And then the last bit of news is the biggest news of the WrestleMania weekend. Biggest news. Hall of Fame. Induction. Of
Boo.
Kid Boo. Motherfucking Rock. Yes. Yes. Yes.
I'm also just gonna thinking about skipping the Hall of Fame. I mean,
like, I want to.
I'm not really that
shit
into many of the people they added, but
I don't know. Like, I want mute. I want to like mute it. Like when his like Hall of Fame speech gets like there. I don't know. It's dumb. Fucking Kid Rock of all things. Like, he was only known for, like, a handful of songs on it. Like, what? He had fucking Stacy Keibler's theme. And, of course, the American Badass theme. And then a whole bunch of other shit that was really forgettable that I can't think of right now. Because, of course, forgettable. But, yeah, there's other people who could have... Like, who could have been in his place? Definitely. Even fucking Limp Bizkit. Limp fucking Bizkit. I feel it. Because, first of all, Roland was a better fucking theme for Undertaker than American Badass. Personally. I thought that Roland was a dope-ass fucking song. I don't care what anybody says. That shit was tight. But, and then, of course, that...
Alright, I'll take word for it. I, as a rock guy, I only liked the first Limp Bizkit album, but that was mainly because it was less trying to be rap metal. I guess Roland was fine in retrospect. I mean, I had no problem with it. I just don't like that era.
Yo, I fucked it wrong with that. I don't care. And then, of course, that dope-ass video package with The Rock and Stone Cold for, what was it? I think it was WrestleMania 17. That video package with, I forgot what song it was.
I'll say about Limp Bizkit for them is I thought they were a perfect match for WWE.
They were definitely at that time, yes.
Yeah, they weren't that soft, hard rock bullshit. I was okay with them. I don't like Limp Bizkit, but a lot of the rock music that WWE uses is just fucking boring.
Yeah.
And Limp Bizkit had enough of an edge that it kind of worked. Also, as much as I don't like Rolling, I know the song. I mean, it's not that I don't like it. I think it's cheesy, but it's a song that stays in your head. I honestly don't remember the American Badass song. I think, does Kid Rock even say that in the song? I don't remember the Kid Rock American Badass. Fuck. I don't.
No, because he was like, American Badass. Dumb shit.
Okay. I vaguely remember it, but I guess, I don't disagree that Rolling was a much better song.
Rolling, yeah. Man. Fucking Rolling.
Plus, I think a lot of my problems with Limp Bizkit is just that Fred Durst is a bitch. But,
He's also a film director.
Yeah.
He tried.
The thing with a lot of music is stuff that I hated at the time. I listen to it now. I'm like, well, it's better than shit I just now. I'm fine. I can't name any new rock bands that appeared in the last 3 years, to be honest with you. I just can't. But if you put on an old Limp Bizkit song I hated, I'll be like, well, Break Stuff was okay. Oh, that's the song they used for the Nick Gage Pentagon Jr. package for GCW.
Oh, yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
You're going to pro wrestling and Quackenbush versus David Starr, and then you're going to see two guys beat the shit out of each other. Oh, Pentagon's new shirt is a slap, is a remark to a comments Vampiro made about him.
Oh, really?
Did you know that?
No.
He has a shirt that says chubby but still chingo or something like that. And I guess it's because Vampiro made a remark about his size. Because Vampiro's been a bitch lately.
What a fucking asshole. Well, that's all I got. So, yeah. Anything else that we can talk about?
I thought I had something else, but I'm trying to remember what it was. Oh, Teddy Hart apparently pulled some bullshit at Black Label Pro. I think he might have taken somebody's stuff. I don't know.
Really?
But they're not going to have him back. And I wasn't quite feeling Jessica Jones season 2. It was okay. I think I liked it better than Daredevil season 2.
Yeah, I felt it was better than Daredevil season 2. But yeah, and you know what was the main thing that was wrong with Jessica Jones season 2?
The mom?
Well, yeah, her and Jessica Jones.
Yeah, right. I think that these Netflix shows, they might have to calm down on the length. If they're not going to do a villain of the week or a mission of the week like the CW superhero shows, you really don't need 13 episodes.
The best Flash episode
just has nothing to even do with their the specific storyline they're going through.
Right.
Which was that really good episode last week with the time bomb.
Basically him freezing time the whole time. Yeah.
Yes.
Interesting.
But I think the shows need to either add more villains of the week or missions of the week, or they need to cut some stuff out. I mean, especially Jessica Jones, because that show is usually a very specific one line through the thing.
Yeah.
She's, and I generally like her, but I definitely liked a lot of the supporting character stuff.
Yeah.
But it was a hard season to finish. The only reason I think I liked it better than Daredevil season 2 is because there's no goddamn hand And oh no Elektra.
Yeah, I'm tired of the hand, tired of Elektra. But yeah, I've really was more intrigued by Jerry, Malcolm, and Trish. Jessica Jones
and they tried really hard to destroy Trish as a character.
Oh, they did. They did. But in the end, she's kind of built back up, and we'll see.
Hey, I wasn't mad at her, too. Jessica's mom tried to kill her. I don't fucking care. Shoot that bitch. And, I mean, I did like the Hogarth stuff, especially some of the last part of it.
Yo, she was so fucking ruthless, dude.
Yes.
That shit was... I knew... I saw that shit coming. I knew that shit was coming.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw that come, but I was like, fuck stuff. Yeah.
Some really good stuff about season two, but overall it was a tough one. I'm hoping that Luke Cage breaks this season two curse.
Yeah, hopefully. Because
you know that fucking Iron Fist ain't going to do that shit.
Yeah, Luke Cage is still going to face an uphill battle just for the fact that there was definitely a point, points during Luke Cage's first season that was really weak.
Yeah, it kind of had the weird slow parts. Like I said, it's a time thing.
Yeah.
I mean, there are some really good episodes, but it's also amount of movement. If you're not doing a mission of the week or a villain of the week, and I like the Netflix stuff. It feels like a lot of times the people who are doing this are trying really hard to ascend out of the superhero genre, but that might work for a Black Panther. Mm-hmm. But when you're giving me 13 episodes of a show with superpowered people, I need somebody to get hit a little bit more often. That's what I think. I think Luke Cage would have been better with maybe 10 episodes. A lot of these shows would be.
Mm-hmm.
But I am looking forward to Luke Cage season 2.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to Punisher season 2.
Oh, yeah.
I am not looking forward to Iron Fist season 2.
You know what? I'm not looking forward to Iron Fist season 2, but I'll definitely check it out. Because, I don't think they can go that that much lower.
Oh, it could be an improvement after this and his bullshit in the Defenders. It has to be. If it's worse than that, then there's something wrong. Hmm. I mean, the last few episodes of Iron Fist were okay, but the best thing about that show for me was the following the son's ascension and the way his son, the son dealt with his father.
Right.
The guy who screwed over Rand in the first place.
Right.
To me, that was the best portion of that stuff.
Yeah.
Because once again, the hand just comes and fucks everything up.
Yep.
And at least this time, they have time to train the guy to have fights, and maybe they'll have actual choreographed fight scenes this time.
Right.
But, other than that, I'm mad that Voltron's only been doing 6-7 episode seasons. What the fuck is this about? Some bullshit. Those first 2 or 3 seasons were all 13 episodes, too. But other than that, I'm just watching the same stuff. Black Lightning's been up.
Yeah.
I'm liking most of the superhero shows.
You saw this week's episode of Black Lightning, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, that reveal was dope.
Yeah. Black Lightning's been great. Arrow's been pretty good. They're building a lot of tension.
I haven't seen Arrow since maybe a few episodes before the mid-season finale, so I don't know what the fuck is going on with Arrow at all.
Yeah, they're basically the episode where the two sides of the team were in conflict were pretty good. I mean, some of the characters are still annoying, but it's interesting because in some of the reviews said basically every episode that they got wrong of Arrow before, they're kind of redoing better. Because you're actually watching the Arrow actually grow as a leader and the way he's operating. He's actually more have become more mature as a character. And I can see the kind of point, he's trying to express that maturity to all the other vigilantes with mixed results. Hmm. But it's been pretty good, interesting, his conflict with his ex-teammates. And the stuff with Speedy, it was nice to see Speedy back in the costume, even if it was briefly. But I like it. Of course, Legends of Tomorrow is fun. But lots of good shows on. I'm waiting for Brooklyn Nine-Nine to get back on, I think, in a couple weeks.
Yeah, sure.
Or next weekend.
What is it next? Yeah, it is next week. Yeah.
Yes, it's been off for too damn long.
Yeah. that Atlanta is on its third episode tomorrow.
Yeah. And then I think there's some other shows are going to be happening sometime soon. Westworld's coming back soon as well.
Yeah, yeah. I got the magazine cover for that for entertainment. And then, shit. And then, you ever seen the show Brockmire?
On no.
IFC? That's a good show. Like, it had one season last year, and it's coming back in, I think, April. So that yeah, definitely check that out. It's about this guy who's a baseball announcer, and some certain circumstances has him fucking have a breakdown and leave. And then he's basically back, and he's announcing for like minor leagues and shit like that. But it's really good, really fun.
100's coming back. If anyone cares about that, I kind of watched that show.
The 100 that depressed.
Yes, in April. That is a depressing dystopian show.
Huh?
Because they're always fucked over, no matter what they do. I'm not sure I'm going to watch this season, but it's pretty intense. But, yeah, and CW's expanding because of how, I guess, well they're doing, so they're going to start adding Sunday nights next year.
Yeah, I heard about that.
So, well, it'll be interesting to see how it goes. I'm also interested to see how the Sabrina Teenage Witch series comes together on Netflix, especially based on the current comic book, because the current comic book is brutal. It's fucking mean. But yeah, that's it. I mean, bought some Blu-ray. That's about it. Justice League and Shape of Water came out, so I grabbed those. And I'm done. I got nothing.
Wow. All right.
So
let's
see. I am on the Instagram at westside.goth, even though I don't really. I haven't posted anything in a while. And I am on Twitter, CM Towns. And I also still have my Vero account, which nothing really happening there. People are still kind of in and out. Like I said, Vero's whole thing is that your dash is in chronological order instead of how Facebook and Instagram have now decided not to do that.
Well, Instagram, I think they've actually updated their shit a little bit. So, like, now, like, more, like, it's not completely chronological, but you see more recent stuff more often than not for once. Like, if you've noticed that.
Well, you're probably right. I know Facebook seriously has an issue with that.
Oh, yeah, they don't give a shit on Facebook.
Yeah. I think the thing with, like, Vero White, a lot of people were, because of, you know, models or comic book creators were having trouble getting their stuff out.
Yeah.
So that was big.
Remember that social media site that was supposed to be a thing a few years ago called Elo? I still get like emails from that.
Yeah, I never tried Elo. I don't even use my LinkedIn account, which I guess is kind of a social media thing.
Yeah.
But I went in there the other day because I was got something, and I found out my supervisor must have looked at my thing like a couple years ago.
Yeah,
and I was like, huh, okay, whatever. But you know, yeah. So that's my Twitter, my Instagram, and that's really all that matters for me, at least.
Huh. All right. So for me, of course. Check us out on rantemradio.com. Rantemradio also has a Twitter, at rantemradio. For us, 9 p.m. Thursdays Eastern Time. You could also listen in on The Rant, Freaks and Oven Geeks, Turnbuckle Throwbacks, and all their other nice, delicious podcasts and shit. Also, the archive page has a whole old episodes of our show and all their other shows. For me, doomsday519.tumblr.com, at Joey Doomsday on Twitter,
Doomsday Space 519 on YouTube. Doomsday Gorilla, as in PWG's Gorilla, on YouTube as my secondary channel. Doomsday Gorilla on Instagram. And at Joey Doomsday 519 on Snapchat, which I've been using a little bit more often again. And, yeah, that's it. That's all I got. And, so we're gonna end this on a high note. And, hey, smoke weed every day.